heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Well, let's start this conversation off with the definition of insanity. Yeah, I like that. And where I go for with every good definition I'm looking for is the Urban Dictionary, of course, don't you? And so, well, the definition of insanity is doing the exact same flipping thing over and over again, expecting the situation to change. That is crazy. Now, that's the definition there in the Urban Dictionary. Now, they use a couple other colorful words, which we won't use here. But you always love that because they talk truth and hit the facts. And that is the definition of insanity. So maybe that's the place to start when we're talking Middle East policy, right? The definition of insanity. So you see some of the revelations here in the past many weeks. Again, this is a conversation that continues on because it's an area that we've never been able to settle down, people. And it's a conversation many of you have turned off, in fact. You don't even really pay attention. And like a lot of things, we don't really pay attention until we have a full fire on our hands. And then we definitely pay attention then. So President Trump comes out and he warns Iran not to threaten the United States or else it would face its official end. Now, that was kind of one of those tweets like the Rocket Man tweet, if you will, where you put it out and it's foreign policy, foreign diplomacy by tweet. You know, a lot of people have a problem with that, of course. But, you know, that's one of those tweets. He warned Iran not to threaten the U.S. or else it would face its official end. As soon as I seen that tweet, I kind of gulped and said, oh boy, here we go here. Another one on our hands. So now this was just after a rocket landed near the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad overnight. So it was a couple of weeks back here. And there's been a series of buildups that are happening there that we're going to talk about today as we unfold this story of Iran. So he goes on to say, if Iran wants to fight, that will be the official end of Iran. Never threaten the United States again. Now, listen, Iran has made a career of threatening the United States. I mean, you kind of can't take that from them. That's what they do, is threaten the United States. They've always done it. So I don't know why you even put that in the tweet. I'm not sure what that's going to accomplish because they threaten us on a regular basis. They've been doing it forever, and they'll continue to do it. So Foreign Minister Zarif, he comes out and says, at real Donald Trump, hopes to achieve what other aggressors failed to do. Iranians have stood tall for millennia, while aggressors all gone. # economic terrorism and genocidal taunts won't end Iran. One of the big things that's come out in the last few weeks is arming the Middle East. There seems to be, and there was a series of things happening here. In regards to Trump. And I want to read you just a couple of headlines here with what's going on. The New York Times reports Trump circumvents Congress to sell weapons to Middle East allies. Another one, Politico, weapons worth $8 billion headed to Middle East over Congress objections. You love the way they taint these headlines. You never need to read these articles. You just got to search and see that the headlines will tell you everything. Trump declares emergency to expedite arms sales to Saudi Arabia. Trump approves arms deal to Saudi Arabia, UAE, amid Iran tensions. Now, at the same time, we have fleets headed out there. We got troops headed out there. So if you really weren't paying attention or didn't understand inside baseball politics, you would think we were in a war with Iran. That's kind of where it starts. So arm in the Middle East. And we've seen this picture before. You know, Saudi Arabia, it's one of those allies. Again, we got to have them. You just have to watch out. You just got to always have an eye on your back. It's like any of the allies out there in the Middle East. You know, it's and it's really taken the word ally to another level, I think. I mean, are they really allies? And that's another conversation, isn't it? Let's talk about regime change. There's a lot of talk about this regime change. In April, just past month here, Foreign Minister Zarif comes out and he tells Chris Wallace, he says, Israel, John Bolton, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, all want regime change. They have all shown that they want to drag the U.S. into a conflict. I do not believe that President Trump wants to do that, he says. Now, this is Zarif talking. Well, he knows that President Trump doesn't want to do this. He knows that. He says, again, Trump is pretty transparent with certain things. You really just have to follow the tweets and understand his art of the deal, if you will, and then you'll get it. You'll be able to connect the dots, right? He said, I believe President Trump ran on a campaign promise to not bring the U.S. into another war, Zarif says. Well, that in itself is an eye-opener to me, because even the people around across the big ocean there are saying, well, he did make that campaign promise. You know, we never really say that about a president because they don't honor campaign promises. That's like built into the cake here, you know. So so when you've got people, you know, adversaries like this saying this, that's kind of interesting. Now, what that means to me, that's code for, well, what this president says is normally what he means, or, you know, he's going to do what he says he's going to do. So that comes back to the red line conversation that previous administrations weren't really good at. And that's a big deal here, because you're going to carry that stick. You've got to make sure it's a big stick, and you've got to be careful where you use that. I'm not saying Trump does that 100% well, because there are some things he puts out there that clearly, as I just pointed out, you don't want to put out there. But it's all political games, people. He goes on to tell Wallace here, Zarif, he says, the foreign minister of Iran, I believe President Trump's intention to put maximum pressure on Iran in order to bring Iran to its knees so that we would succumb to pressure is doomed to failure. And these individuals know this. So right away, he's talking about, you know, okay, that he understands the pressure that's being put on, and he's blaming all the parties here. Of course, Israel is enemy number one all the time. I mean, we know that. And Bolton, of course, is just extra fodder for all of this. Of course, he's called the Iranian Hawk. That's his nickname there, you know. And in fact, it brings me to another point here. So President Trump was joking about Bolton here. Just in recent weeks here, he comes out and says that if the United States foreign policy was decided by his national security advisor, John Bolton, we'd be in four wars by now. That's one of those jokes you kind of want to be careful for, you see. Now, he made those remarks, they say quasi, quote, quote, in private, but there's nothing really in private when it comes out of your mouth. And this president should know that. Because he's you know, prime for that. I mean, he's had nothing but leaks and problems, I mean, from the start of his administration. So what does private really mean? There is no such thing as private or privacy. It does not exist. So he says, you know, again, he made these remarks mostly in private, and as Bolton was angling against Iran. Now, of course, the New York Times is all over this story. They're reporting it. But you expect this sort of thing from these kinds of people, because, you know, they're not really on our side, these media publications and this Fourth Estate, which is completely void of any common sense and brains, I mean, with what they put out there, you know. So officials who spoke with the publication said the president favored his advisor's tough measures on the Iranian regime, the Times reports, but disliked the narrative that Bolton was moving toward a regime change in the region. All right. So is it regime change or not regime change? What do we want exactly, right? Well, Zarif comes back and says Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and National Security Advisor John Bolton, they want to put as much pressure on the Iranian people so that they would take action against the Iranian government. Well, they're wrong in their analysis, he says. They're wrong in their hope and illusions. It would put pressure on the Iranian people, yeah. But the outcome of that pressure would be that it would make Iranians more determined. Now, that's a question that we need to answer today and find out, is that true? I mean, is there such a thing as Iranian exceptionalism? And are these people going to fight for what's right? I mean, are they going to support their government, or I don't know. You look at telltale signs. I'm not sure there's a lot of truth to that. But then again, it's coming from Foreign Minister Zarif, isn't it now? Now, one other thing with Zarif, he says, he's speaking about the world community here. And I find this interesting as well. It's a piece of the conversation. He says, nobody is happy that the United States is trying to impose its will on the rest of the international community. China's not happy. Turkey's not happy. Russia's not happy. France is not happy. U.S. allies are not happy. It's up to these countries if they want to have their lives ruled by the United States. Again, and that's a conversation we have here all the time in the United States, isn't it now, people? You know, how much do we get involved in these kinds of affairs? And is peace ever a possibility in the Middle East? I'll ask all the people that come on the program today, a lot of great minds about Iran on the program today by chance. And we'll ask that question and find out if any of them really think that's possible, or if we're just going through the motions, sort of a slow walk here, you know? And again, the point where I started this thing about insanity, you know, what is the insanity clause here? You know, there's been a lot of conversation. Iran's playing victim. They've always played victim. Of course, President Trump says they're a bad actor. And of course, this is the country that spends, I mean, they've just spent $1 billion over the past year supporting terrorist organizations like Hezbollah and Hamas. But this is what they do. And they have a buildup all around the Middle East. And of course, the ultimate goal here is to take Israel out. That's the ultimate goal. And then big bad Satan right with it, the United States. But they're going to have a little more than where they're at now to do that, I think. But that's their ultimate goal, and they play every day for that end cause. And, you know, we have to be right 100% of the time, I guess, is my message to you. They don't have to be right 100% of the time, you see, but we do. They just need one time to do something that is that provocative. So then it comes back to the nuclear agreement, that historic nuclear agreement that President Obama and all his cast of characters signed on to. It was very controversial, yeah. And so Iran just recently continued to test the ballistic missiles, and he was questioned as to why, and Zarif says, well, it's because the United States pulled out of the nuclear agreement, you fool. What do you think? There's no agreement there. And, you know, and there's a lot of talk about also Zarif and Rouhani, are they losing their power, their grip to the hardliners in Iran? It's the same conversation again, the moderates versus there, and it goes back again over many, many years. It's like musical chairs almost. It just changes. The people change, but they're always walking around the chairs, trying to find a chair to sit in, I think, is the way I would describe that program. Huh? It's a sick case of musical chairs, really. But then you got to look at the ideology of all this, people. You got to dial it all back and understand, what are we dealing with? And nobody wants to talk about this. What are we dealing with? Because that's what politics is in America. Nobody deals with this stuff. It's just more fodder for the media and the news cycle and the politicians. And, you know, where does it end? Well, it never really ends. We just keep spending our treasure and, more than that, our blood. That's what we do over there. But with an end game of what, you know? And again, these people, it's death to America. It's always been death to America, death to Israel. That's always been the story coming out of that region. They hate America. It's the big Satan to them. They don't like it. They don't like us. They want us dead. Well, there's an ideology behind that, people. We talk about this often. We report on this. But that's what it is. In fact, the Ayatollah was just out recently. He just told us at some student meeting or something. He says, you young people should be assured that you will witness the demise of the enemies of humanity. Give me a break. Meaning the degenerate American civilization and the demise of Israel. That's what they live for, people. That is the end goal. So how do you change the relationship with the end goal with the adversary who wants to kill you? That's their only purpose, is to do away with you. And now they're talking about, yeah, we'll sit down with President Trump and talk. And of course, President Trump is willing to talk down with anybody. He'll sit down with anybody, he says. And I believe that's true. I don't think he's really scared or threatened to sit down with it. I think if Satan showed up tomorrow and wanted a meeting, I think he would probably sit down and discuss the humanity and the world and where we would be. He'd discuss it with anybody, any of these leaders. Of course, some of them would be qualified as Satan, wouldn't they? No. But I think the president would do that. he's open-minded to have a conversation, a dialogue. And then it gets interesting from there. And then the last piece of this, friends, is our internal politics here in America. Wow, they're squashing the agenda around the world, foreign policy. The president has no help. That really is, to me, the big boot in all of this, is the fact that everybody is laughing. And I've been pointing this out to you just about every day now, so you're aware of it. And I'm going to keep pointing it out till you get it through your skulls out there. Well, that really is the real problem we have, is we have no unity here back at home, and everybody's laughing at us around the globe as we continue to bash each other up with all this nonsense, you know, because it's all power, greed, corruption. It's all it is. It's the same baloney. Somebody says, well, it's at a record pace. I don't know if it's at a record pace. We've had this forever, it seems, here in America. Somehow the will and majesty of the people of America seem to pull through somehow. I just don't know if that's always going to be the case, people. But that's the story here on The Voice of a Nation today as we talk about Iran. Iran, where are we at in Iran in this relationship? Peace in the Middle East, and let's all define insanity, huh? Let's look for a recipe for that today.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, I'd like you to meet here today, Todd Wood. Todd is a national security expert and political analyst. He's Washington Times columnist. He's an author, veteran, Air Force pilot, and is a former international bond trader with expertise in emerging markets. And Todd, it is awesome to meet you today here. So,
thank you for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, so we're talking Iran, and I know it's a subject you follow, you talk about, you hear the opening remarks. So I start with the insanity thing. Now, let's start with insanity here. Do you have do you have a different word that you, is this insanity what we do out there, or how would you open this conversation?
I would say the word is very fitting, but not necessarily in the way I think you are describing it. I would say the insanity that has gone on for the past 40 years is Western governments trying over and over and over again to find and supposedly deal with the so-called moderates in Iran, which literally don't exist. So you've had the Democratic administrations recently, Obama. You've had the Bushes, you've had both sets of Bushes, you've had Clinton, all thinking they can find moderates in Iran and they will give them something and Iran will be nice to us. And that is just complete insanity. So I think you're right using the word, but I would change the way I'm not sure how you were thinking of it. But
well, exactly what you just said, my friend, is perfect. That would be my sentiments exactly. And now, many people believe Zarif and Rouhani are moderates. You don't see it that way.
Well, anyone who knows anything about Iran, who's spent time with the people or the population, or knows the absolute diabolical evil of these people, would not put them in that category.
Right. And that's a great way to say it, because what did I say? Their ultimate goal is the death of Israel, death of America. So how do you deal with people like that? How would you deal with them? Based on everything you just laid out, I think we're in agreement there, but let's see where we can find some disagreement, hopefully. So how would you deal with them?
Well, first let me say that President Trump is the first American leader, possibly Reagan, but really since FDR or Eisenhower, who is willing to use the full weight of American power to achieve our political and geopolitical goals. So I believe he's extremely correct in putting as much pressure to bear on Iran, and we still have more arrows to use in the quiver before we move to a military solution. But let me take a step back and just say that the Iranian people don't want this regime. this regime is literally killing, executing. I mean, the mullahs in Iran, after they took power, were supposed to bring some type of Islamic freedom to the country, and they did the exact opposite. So there's been movements brewing against them for 40 years, but they've been ruthless in suppressing them. I mean, most people don't know they've been more efficient than Hitler when it comes to genocide. They killed 30,000 people in 1 week in 1988, executed them with cranes over swimming pools because they could drain the blood. So they kill female demonstrators when they're out demonstrating against the regime, put, you know, 16, 12-year-old girls, put their pictures in the paper and ask, who knows these girls? Will their parents come pick up the bodies? I mean, these people are just, the only way to confront them is to defeat them.
Well, what you described there is a culture we're finding in a lot of places where, you know, you can't define it as humanity or anything close to it. It's evil. It's this good and evil business I talk about all the time, Todd. That's really what we got here. And this is Iran is at the center of that talk when you, you know, talk about this. But I want to stay on the Iranian people because you bring up some really interesting things there that I am very attuned to when it comes to the Iranian people. And I often question, like I do with Venezuela and other properties that are under dictatorship and evil people, that really it takes the people, the movement of the people. The people have to be empowered to take it back in any community. And there's always going to be death. There's always going to be killings and death with these kinds of things. It's going to happen. But it depends how bad those people want it to be able to create their own revolution, to take their government back. What would it take in Iran? Because in recent months, I've had this sense, or I get the sense, or that the Iranian people are very unhappy. Now, obviously, sanctions have taken their pain. I mean, they've been very painful. And Zarif points that out and talks about the Iranian people. But he also kind of, as he always does, they lie through their teeth there. He then turned and said, well, but as I said, I questioned just before you came on there, remember, is there such a thing as Iranian exceptionalism? And will they step up and do something about
I would say Persian versus Iranian. But yes, go ahead.
Same thing. Well, call it what you want. But let's let's talk about that exactly. What would it take? So let's step back and take a moment, please, of the Iranian people. What do you think it would take for the Iranian people to step up and take that power back? What would it take for them to do that?
Well, this is something that Americans, due to the media's complicity with this insanity we've discussed over the last several decades, that America doesn't know that the Iranian people have been just trying to do that for the last 40 years. They defected, tens of thousands of them have demonstrated against, and I use the word defect, or basically left the loyalty to the regime. In the 80s and 90s, there was a 10,000-man army with 300 tanks and armored vehicles on the Iraqi border, which routinely made incursions inside of Iran trying to bring down the government and came very close to doing that until the U.S. invaded in 2003 in Iraq, took all their weapons, gave them Geneva Convention protections, and then Obama turned them over to the Iraqis, who promptly executed most of them, or many of them, before the remaining 3,000 were moved to Albania as political refugees. So the Iranian people have been trying to do this for decades. Obama's treachery in not supporting the effort in 2009, when the people literally did come to the streets in the hundreds of thousands, is just a perfect example of his complicity with the Shia Islamic theocracy in Iran. And talk about exceptionalism, the Persian people have been exceptional for thousands of years, but that has nothing to do with this regime. The regime has taken over all the means of production, for instance, due to corruption. And for instance, right now, half the population does not have drinking water or running water because all the water has been diverted. I mean, how can that kind of government have any legitimacy over the people?
So what would it take again for, do you think, and that's a difficult question, but is what would the strategy be? And how could the Iranian people move up and take that? I hear what you're saying. This is what we find in all these kind of repressive governments. I mean, they don't have a lot of things. I mean, you can't buy a roll of toilet paper in some of these countries. I mean, I get it. So how do these people get empowered enough? What would it take for them? And you say it's been going on for decades. So is the plan then that if we could get the people to rise and get the government out of there, because as you say, there are no real moderates there. They're all hardliners. So how do we make that? Should that be our goal, do you think?
Yes, Don? regime change is the only answer for the Iranian people, and secondarily for the United States and in the positive consequences to the world.
Okay.
So, and the only way to do that is what exactly Trump is doing now.
Okay.
I'm not advocating putting troops in Iran or having a war with Iran. I'm advocating doing what we're doing now, which is giving the resistance inside of Iran, which is organized, determined, just, you know, gone through the trials of blood. There's been 120,000 of them executed since the 80s.
Right.
They have a thing. They say that we have to pay the price for our country. Many of them have paid the price. Mm-hmm. And to support this type of people is what we need to do. They're organized. They're ready. They're determined. They just need outside support to put increasing pressure on the regime so it will collapse on its own weight.
So you really believe, I can feel that passion with what you say there. So, okay, I'm convinced now that you believe the Iranian people are ready for that big change, that big moment, because that's what needs to happen. Everybody, I think, agrees with that. Here's the other thing I would point out to you, and I don't know if you can help me with this or not, but regime change throughout the area has not worked well for us anywhere. I mean, regime change has really come back. I mean, it started with the whole Arab Spring business, turned into an Arab nightmare. And so regime change has not been successful. And with any country, including one as complicated with political impact as Iran, I mean, how do we ensure what happens next? And then aren't we again back into the nation building business? I mean, how would we? This is a tough.
No, I'm not advocating that at all.
Okay.
These people have a democratic government in waiting that has been in exile for decades.
That's a good point.
They have a 10-point plan, which includes, and by the way, not just freedom from Iran for Iran, but a reformation for Islam. These people are advocating a tolerant, in fact, the movement is run by a female. And so they're advocating democracy, free elections, free markets, and a tolerant version of Islam inside of Iran, which they will then export to the rest of the world. I think that if you solve the Iranian problem, bring down this regime, which is supporting terrorism throughout the Middle East and throughout Europe and in the United States, where they're bragging they have terror cells here ready to kill Americans, where they've arrested assassins in Washington a few months ago trying to kill resistance members. You know, you will solve many problems in the Middle East. You will solve the, right now they're building a land bridge from Tehran to Syria to the Shia regime there. You will solve the pressure on Israel. You will solve Iraq, where they've really destroyed any progress America made there. You will solve Iran. You will solve terrorism throughout the world. So I think Trump is exactly right to put his finger right on this button.
Wow.
Push as hard as he can.
All right. I'm actually a little excited now. You got me flowing here with the whole thing here, because you talked about a tolerant version of Islam, you just said. And that was like, I don't hear that from anybody anymore. That's like, doesn't come up at all.
Because nobody in the media wants you to hear that.
Right. Okay.
There's a reason you don't know that.
Please.
I mean, I'm just saying because the media doesn't want you to know that, because the progressive agenda, which is in bed with Islam, the violent, evil version of Islam, they are in bed with that. They, you know, come on, Obama sent them billions of dollars and gave them a pathway to nuclear weapons. That's what he was all about. Valerie Jarrett, you know, made that happen.
Sure.
So, you know, there's a reason I'm saying that most Americans don't know anything about this, is because people in power do not want you to know anything
about it. Right. Well, a lot of Americans also, Todd, don't know that President Barack Obama put more Muslims in high places throughout our government during his administration than ever.
Exactly.
People don't really know that Valerie Jarrett there, that is her whole origins, and they don't understand the history of where this man came from, and that he is a absolute Marxist, socialist, communist, evil force.
Of course. Yeah. No, I'm just saying that Iran is a transformational problem, that if we can get this murderous regime out of power, the Iranian people will take care of themselves.
Right.
It's not like Syria, where you'll have another civil war.
Okay. Okay. Right. That's a great point. Yeah, because that's what I was referencing earlier. I mean, with these regime changes. Sorry, the group you speak about with the mm-hmm. with the woman that's leading with the tolerant. Mm-hmm. What is this group called again, please?
It's called the Mujahideen e Khalq, which is the Iranian word. Yeah. It's abbreviated the People's Mujahideen of Iran, or MEK. Mm-hmm. There has been a it's a long and interesting history, and I'll just be upfront and transparent. The reason I'm so knowledgeable about this is I'm the only journalist that's been really allowed to come in and learn about their organization. I've been to their camps in Albania, and I'm currently writing a book about the whole issue.
So this I know
a lot about this group. And let me say that if you research them, they have been demonized by the Ministry of Intelligence in Iran throughout the West for decades, and actually got them on the terrorism list for a period of time before a federal judge forced Hillary Clinton to take them off.
Yeah.
They weren't terrorists. So they've been called a cult. They've been called a lot of things, but what they are really is a group of freedom fighters who want their country back.
Freedom fighters. Wow. Wow. Let me ask you one other thing about that before we leave that group you're speaking about here, because in my brain here and trying to register a tolerant version of Islam is something I've really been trying to wrestle with in recent months and years. And only because I have so many experts on this topic around our platform, quite frankly, far smarter than I are on it. And I've learned a lot over the years. But here's the thing. If that's the case, I'm wondering a moment here, because I'm trying to
Be
informed and educated here as well, as all of our listeners are. So this group here, do they read the Quran? Do they understand the Quran? Do they follow the Quran is my question, I guess.
You know, I have not delved into their religious beliefs as much as I do know that they're very religious, but they are in their, they put out a lot of propaganda, a lot of explanations about what their beliefs are.
Okay.
And they don't believe that Islam teaches the things that ISIS thinks Islam teaches.
Interesting.
They believe that Islam teaches love, freedom. You know, first of all, there are billions of Muslims in the world. That's not going away. It's not changing.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way to fix this problem is to have some type of reformation, as the Christian church did, you know, 1,000 years ago.
Interesting.
Or 700 years ago.
So I wonder if that would be possible, but it would be a moment in time for sure. I mean, could we change something? Because the ultimate goal of the Islam community is world domination, and it's to do away with
it. There is a political, yes, right now Islam is a political movement, but that is based on the radical extremist version. And I'm not trying to apologize for Islam, don't get me wrong. I have fought that being brought into the West. From time to time, we write about it in my own media company often. And so we are completely against that. So I'm not apologizing for the migrations or for terrorism or for anything. What I'm saying is there is an alternative that, if allowed to flourish, could be a solution to this problem.
Yeah, no, I'm listening, and I find it really interesting, your conversation there. I'm going to bring it up again. In fact, I'm thinking ahead here, Todd, and there's some future program, and I would love to have you on with some other folks and talk about this, because, listen, I'm an optimist. I want to believe in hope. I want to believe in the possibilities. I just, you know, there's a big learning curve on what you're speaking about to know if that's if that can really happen, you know, because we all would love that in America, I think, if we could just find, you know, and they say a lot also, you know, Islam is, we hear that Islam is the religion of peace, and yet we know that not to be true. And so we're rattled with that. Christianity in America is like, okay, like we're really not buying that anymore. You know, the government has tried to push that on us and we're not buying it, you know, right? I mean,
I don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm trying to do. What I'm saying is there is a movement that has been brutally repressed because they don't want this out. I mean, think about it. It removes the ideological legitimacy for terrorism. I mean, so the people who are pushing this have literally gone on a decades-long campaign of trying to suppress this movement, and therefore will do anything they need to do to prevent them from coming into power in Tehran. And let me say, Rudy Giuliani, Newt Gingrich, John Bolton, are all heavily involved with this group.
So is that even John Bolton, you say, huh?
In the past, before he came into the White House. Yes, of course. So they are huge supporters. So this is not something new to the conservative movement. It is a problem for people to get past the disinformation that has come out against them over the years. Mm-hmm. And so the Ministry of Intelligence in Iran uses that very effectively in the Western press. And the Western press is a willing enabler of trying to suppress this movement from being released.
All right. Let me get your, I want to get your insights on another point here. Recently, John Kerry has been seen in, he's had meetings in Iran with actually the many of the folks there, including Zarif, the foreign minister, and other lead people in Iran. And they've been talking about politics and really telling them not to pay attention to Trump. Don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. He'll be gone soon. Mm-hmm. And of course, as they continue to try to push him out the far left here and get him out of office somehow, some way, you begin to connect the dots and see what's really going on here. And yes. Then you've got Senator Dianne Feinstein recently coming with her. That was a real hullabaloo just recently in her phone conversations. And I think it was the iPad or iPhone or some darn thing she had exposed with Zarif's name on there. And everybody's like, wow, she's meeting. And of course, she met with them and had conversation and dinner. And of course, everybody trusts Dianne. She was so great with the Chinese. We figure she's got to be doing a splendid job with the Iranians.
Right.
So talk to me about this Logan Act. Nobody says, I'm so tired of here. Well, we've got this act, but it's never executed. I mean, why the hell aren't we using this? These people should be locked up.
That's a great question. You know, I can't answer that effectively. There's a lot of laws that have been resurrected specifically to go after Trump. You know, the foreign agent registration law has been, I think, prosecuted 7 times since the World War II. And it was used extensively against Trump. So there are statutes that are on the books that don't seem that are selectively enforced. Let's put it that way. I can't really speak to why that's not being used, but obviously you share your frustration. But I will say that Obama, Kerry, are all in bed with this regime. And yes, the objective is to try to wait out Trump, which is why his reelection is so crucial.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we know, we can see it in broad daylight here, what's happening. They don't even hide it real well, or they can't hide it real well, obviously. They don't have the talent to do that. But it is amazing, Todd, when you look at what you're saying, the way we lay the pieces down. I mean, We're in a massive coup right now that's happening here in this country. The only thing they haven't done is run into the Oval Office with the AK-47s yet. But we're in a coup effect here.
I completely agree.
Yeah, totally. And nobody's really admitting it. And the media is so evil and so disruptive. When you said earlier, well, the progressives sort of like this whole, and they're in bed with the Islam folks and what have you. And I'm thinking, where do these people come from? I mean, and then I've got some moderate Democrat friends I talk to, Todd, and it's like, you know, I don't even know what to say to them anymore. Like, we don't even have anything in common. I really don't, to God, I'm almost embarrassed. And then every so often they'll send me a message, an email or a tweet and say, hey, I'm over here. Or you know what it is? They'll take something light we're doing because we're moving some heavy blocks here at America Out Loud. And so when we do something light, they'll sort of stick their foot in and chime in and say, oh, I'm over here. Do you remember? I say, no, I don't remember where the hell you are, you progressive liberal Marxist. Socialist nuts.
No, I agree. No, we're in a complete battle for our children's future was the way I look at it. I have 5 children and 1 stepdaughter. So I'm very focused on trying to leave them a better world than we have now because we're not going in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, it's it. We're all here. I think a lot of us good people are here for the right reasons. And I love what we're doing here. The grassroots and alternative media, I think, are on fire here in America because we realize the void is massive that has been placed with the Fourth Estate, which is really sad because we've gotten to a critical point in our history here where we need the Fourth Estate and we don't have them. I mean, they're not there. They're not existent. It's beyond sad. It's evil. And you have to look at the motives here. And in another piece of this by another day we talk about is the globalist movement. What are the globalists? I mean, that's got to be an underlying motive as well here. You know,
That's connected. I mean, that's probably another show, but that's connected all into, I think, really China. I think China is behind a lot of this.
Amen.
Communism lost the Cold War militarily, but they have won the information war over the last 30 years. And I think a lot of it is coming from the biggest communist dictatorship evil regime in the world, which is Beijing. Yep. So but let me say something about media. I completely agree with you. I want to toot my own horn a minute and say that I agree that the legacy media needs to die. And something needs to take its place. We have created a new media company called CD Media or Creative Destruction Media. Okay. And we have reporters throughout the world, the Middle East, Eastern Europe, and we're bringing real quality, high quality news to people. So
awesome. Awesome. Well, we will promote that for you 100%. And let me ask you this, Baruch Plettner, is he part of that group?
Yes, he's one of the editors of our Israeli site and the opinion editor for the entire company.
What a really cool guy, by the way. We had him on the other day. I really like him. And he just was great information. I could have talked to him for days. I mean, just really.
He's brilliant.
More Voice of the Nation in just a moment here.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Pat Boone here for the folks at Swiss America. Rock solid foundations are vital in life, in business, and in finance, because in the end, only what we've built on a firm foundation will withstand the storms of life. Today, the economic storms are raging and the foundations of everything are being tested. The world economy has never looked shakier. And gold, the world's oldest and most trusted form of money, is also grabbing headlines. Now is the time to put your future on a rock-solid foundation. Swiss America will help you create an indestructible asset today. Discover the timeless truth about gold and silver by calling Swiss America or visiting online at SwissAmerica.com.
800-978-3901. Once again, that's 800-978-3901.
Okay, on with our panel of voices here, friends. Joining us, Captain Stu Swirk is here. He's a retired naval officer, a defense contractor, columnist, and contributor here at America Out Loud. Ilana Friedman. Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst specializing in terrorism and politics. She'd authored a series of books in the America Out Loud bookstore and a columnist and show host here as well. And also on our panel, Arnetta Notkin is here. Arnetta spent 30 years working on Wall Street. She's a constitutional centrist and a producer here and a contributor at America Out Loud. Ilana, I want to ask you right up front here, because he brought up an interesting point about this group. He says that is, and he used some words that I never hear anymore. Now, he blamed it on the media, but I don't know that I completely agree with that at all. But he talked about a tolerant form of Islam and tolerant Muslims. And he talked about that group there, that, and there's a woman in charge of the group. Do you know the group? What do you know about it? And is this a positive thing?
Yes, I do know the group. I have actually known about them and have been in contact with them. They had, even when they were considered a terrorist group for many years, actually, they had an office in Washington in which some of their representatives were in other forms. Were being active. They were considered a terrorist group. That ended in 2012, and they were taken off that list. I like the idea of the reformation of Islam. I think as a big subject, it's a good one.
Okay.
But making it actually happen, is it possible to do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's not clear.
Because
as you pointed out, there are billions of Muslims in this world. And This is a question of how and there's one other issue. Iran is a Shia Muslim country, and Shias are a very tiny portion of the Muslim population. Most of the Muslim population in the world are Sunnis, and there's a big difference in terms of philosophy, in terms of theology, and there are very practical implications. So how effective this can be coming from Iran, I don't know, but there is a Iranian revolution. It's not a good word because that's been used already.
Okay. Let me ask you a follow-up here to something, please. So when you talk about they were on that terrorist, they were a terrorist group, this group were, and then they were taken off in 2012.
No, I didn't say that they were a terrorist group. I said they were on the list of terrorist organizations.
Okay, all right. Well, that would be the same to me. I'm not saying you call them that, but if they're on the terrorist list of a group of terrorists, then I would consider them a terrorist organization. Or who the hell put them on there?
Well, they could be wrong.
Let me stop you there. That is my question to you. Exactly. Let me get the question out here. That's my question to you. A, were they a terrorist group? B, that means Barack Obama took them off. If they came off in 2012, that means he took them off the list. Why did he take them off? Do you know anything more about that?
The official report was that Hillary Clinton took them off the list because she was the head of the State Department, and it's a State Department list. I do not know what the rationale was, except that there was a tremendous amount of pressure on them to do that, since they weren't, by classic definition, they were not a terrorist group.
Interesting. Stu, I don't know what you know about this group.
I know actually quite a bit.
Okay, well then let me ask you first here something. That's good. I didn't know, because I didn't follow this particular, what was happening here. I never hear this come up with anybody. And here's what I find interesting, is that she's saying that, okay, I mean, how did they ever get on the terrorist group to begin with? And then Hillary Clinton actually pulled them off. I find that very interesting. And could this be, as Todd Wood put it out here, a hope of something promising when it comes to identifying Islam in the way that we need to?
I would start out by saying my view of MEK, Mujahideen al-Khalq, is a little bit more nuanced. I'm not as hard over that they're going to somehow revolutionize Islam or whatnot. You have to go back to their founding. MEK was founded in 1965 as an alternative, essentially underground revolutionary group to go after the Shah of Iran. And why did they want to do that? Because their founding ideology was essentially a combination of Islam and socialism. Why was a socialism brought into Iran? It's because of the geopolitics of the Cold War. The U.S. has been involved in Iran only since post-World War II. But the Russians have been involved in Iran for centuries, including under the Tsars. And it turns out Iran was a battlefield, quote-unquote, during the Cold War. And when Sadegh Mossadegh in the 50s nationalized the Iranian oil industry, the CIA overthrew him, and we got the Shah. Now, what did the Shah end up doing? He basically implemented a secular government that was not as Islamic focused as a lot of the governments in the region. And MEK came on the scene as a means of leveraging some of the Soviet influence through the Tudor Party. The Tudor Party is the Communist Party of Iran, essentially. And some of the MEK philosophy and ideology was bled over from Tudor. Now, MEK has evolved over the years. I can remember being in uniform and reading during the Operation Iraqi Freedom some intelligence reports about MEK. You have to understand that a lot of the infighting in Iraq in those days was courtesy of militia, and militias were controlled by certain local mullahs, and or they were aligned with certain ideological groups in Iran and Iraq. MEK was involved in certain Shia militia that did in fact execute or fought against Americans on the ground in Iraq. So the fact is they were, I mean, in the classical definition of terrorism, you could say that they did commit terrorist acts. So now that's quite a while ago. And obviously the MEK folks have evolved, that they want to make their movement more palatable to the West in particular, because they're looking for support. You know, I kind of look at them as analogous to the white Russian exiles in Paris, you know, after the Russian Revolution. Got all these Russians that were living in Paris that were looking to somehow overthrow the communists and bring the czars back into power, and that really never did take place, did it? I mean, MEK is on the outside looking in, and they've got a lot of support in the West because they have moderated their views and they talk the right things, and they are pitted against an evil regime, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, I'd like to say one more thing about Iran, if I could. Iran is a fairly complex country. There's different races. There's different, you know, they are Shia, but there are more religions there. There's Zoroastrians. There's, you know, there's a Sunni influence. There's others. There's even Christians there too. Plus there's Kurds. There's different races and so forth. So they're quite a mixture. And so you have this pan Shiaism that most Iranians that are Shia are all about, and to some extent, why Iran meddles in the Middle East is because there are pockets of Shia that get persecuted in Sunni countries. Interestingly enough,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
so, I mean, it's not quite as black and white as you might think it is. And yeah. the other thing that underlies everything is the oil and gas world. Remember I said there's the Cold War where it was the U.S. versus the Soviet Union? Well, that's also involved in oil politics. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, there are a couple of pipeline plans, and there's a Russian version and there's a U.S. version. The Russian version is Iran through Syria to Europe.
A positive, Arnetta, do you think? Do you think we're headed? I mean, do we have a shot here, or is this back to the insanity clause here? What do you see after learning
all this? Well, I think for the first time, we do have a shot at it of keeping Iran, perhaps, from trying to destroy Israel is the largest issue. Mm-hmm. And Saudi Arabia and Israel have actually been in talks and meeting about this. So we do have a shot at it. Is it risky? Yes, it's risky. But if there's a way to contain the fanaticism of Iran and their Islamic terrorists, this is the only issue and the only way to keep us, the U.S., from having to take direct action.
Is there a way to, Ilana, that Arnetta puts out there, is there a way to pull Iran? I mean, there's no way to pull the hardliners into line here. So let's be clear. What I find interesting is this conversation about the regime change I talked about with Todd Wood, because the president came out and said he's not looking for a regime change. And that's what he said publicly. That's a statement. Now, John Bolton has come out and has hinted otherwise, which is typically what John Bolton does, that he's looking for regime change. And there's a lot of pressure on that right now. And they're right. Really, then there's, okay, do we talk or don't we talk? What's the underlying consequence here, Ilana, from, first of all, just the arms that were given to these countries, you know, now there were armed in Middle East. That's come back before to haunt us. The possibility of regime change in Iran, what kind of confidence do you have in that?
Well, I think it's possible. And I honestly agree with Todd that this is probably the only way that we're going to see Iran change dramatically so that it falls in line with a lot of the rest of the world. But we have to remember that there is a kind of hidden axis here, an axis of countries. And the alignment is Iran, North Korea, Russia, China, and to a lesser extent, maybe if you're going to diagram this, put this underneath, Cuba and Venezuela. And these countries are all in a kind of a moving alignment in which Iran and North Korea have been working on nuclear projects together since 2012. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at something which is extremely complicated. And so I think the center, the core of it, is if we were able to, or through the Iranian people, or as Todd says, through the Persian people, if we were able to support their resistance movement so that it was possible to topple this theocratic government and put a more democratic government in place, I think we would see enormous changes in this whole, this house of cards would, to a certain extent, come tumbling down.
Okay, well, that's fair. It's a fair assessment. Stu, let me give you the last word on this, please. I'd like your opinion on that as well, the regime change. Is that the only way forward? Is that the way?
There's nothing can be done in Iran until the regime is changed. The problem is that the main center of gravity in Iran is the Iranian Republic Guard Corps, IRGC, and their Quds force associated, right, as well as the internal security forces that prevail in all the cities and provinces and such. Mm-hmm. The dilemma there is that they're armed. They are supported by the regime. The few benefits that the regime are able to dispense go to the IRGC. Mm-hmm. The IRGC has a vested interest in maintaining power because it keeps them in a relative good life compared to the rest of the Iranians. Okay. Now, whether the Iranian people can rise up and somehow displace the government in Tehran, I don't know. It depends on what the IRGC does. Will the IRGC fire at their own people in such an insurrection? Based on past evidence, I would think that they have done that and or would be willing to do that in the future. So the question is whether there would be enough force applied to displace the IRI. I just don't see it happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's an excellent point here. And that's always been the case. I mean, you've got to get into those internal forces. The Revolutionary Guard has always been centered to that because they protect those leaders. And Stu brings up a great point. That's why they keep them fed and happy. You see, they do that so that because that's their defense here. That's what's protecting let's call it the palace. That's protecting Iran, the internal political structure of Iran. In the meantime, the losers in all of this is the Iranian people. But it's always that way, people. It's always the people that get lost in all this. And as always, I say to you, until they rise, it's going to be the same problem. I'll predict at this point, I think there could very well be a future meeting with President Trump and the Iranian leadership, I believe, with Rouhani and Zarif. I think that could happen. I know that some people may disagree with that, but that Trump is known for that kind of a thing. And I think his sanctions have really brought them to their knees. And no matter what Zarif says, it has penalized them a great deal. They're going to have to make some difficult decisions in Iran. How important are those nuclear weapons to them? And that is a big decision because at the end of the day, people, you know, when your goal is to do away with Israel and America, you need those nuclear weapons. You see the problem, don't you know? You know, that's what they want and that's the reason for that. And the problem with that is they are fanatics. And once they have them, I got news for you, they'll use them. Because these people want to die. That's their whole motive in life. So you start to connect all of that and you see that we're playing with a loaded gun here is what's happening here. That's why it's so critical here, what we're taking place. The other thing I find interesting is back to what Alana was just saying when she named some of the actors in the world. This I equivalent to the, this is like a round table of Satan. When you speak about all the players, it really is a round table of Satan disciples. That's the way I see it. In the fight of good versus evil again. And there's a lot of them, and they're all sort of connected in some weird way around the world. And you see that. I mean, and it all comes out in the politics here at one point, day, form, shape, or another. And it's all these evil dictators and despots and evil people that are circling the planet here. They get into these forms and repressive governments and just everything that comes from that, as we've just laid out a perfect case for you here today. It's going to take a lot here, including real common sense here back at home that we don't have currently. Sadly, that's what pains me the most is our internal political structure here. I feel like we could fight these battles if we could just get our own people to the table and have some real dialogue and conversation. I really mean that. And the fact that they're not willing to win, they won't even win on our own immigration front, let alone foreign policy. So now you really see we have a completely dysfunctional government. We're really no better or worse than a lot of these places. I mean, it's what I continue to point out to you, even though people think we're invincible here. We're not invincible. I continue to tell you that. And so, listen, that's the fight forward. It's the fight of good versus evil. It's a fight we need to take to the streets every day here, people. It's we the people, and you've got to hold the politicians accountable. That's all I can say. There is no other way forward. If you don't like what you see now, change the game coming up in the next election here and get your friends and family to change the game as well. It's the voice of a nation, friends, and that's the conversation on Iran. And as always here, you just know you're going to get truth with what we're talking about here. But listen, my message to you, to we the people, it's time to get involved and get loud.